This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Special edition iFanboy podcast, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with the iFanboy Animated Brain Trust, Paul Montgomery.
Hey, everybody.
And Ryan Haupt.
You can trust us.
And we are discussing the Blu-ray release of Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, which was an animated film that was released in theaters on Christmas Day of 1993.
Yes, I remember. I got the, I was so excited. I got the junior novelization for Christmas. And inside the junior novelization were tickets for me and my dad to go see it.
Oh, wow.
Like the day after Christmas. I think that's what we did. I don't remember exactly. But this was an event. And this was the year after Batman Returns, mm-hmm. Which I guess would also have been. Was that Christmas?
I don't remember.
I don't know. But like, it seems like it would be a Christmas movie rather than a summer movie. But
how old were you two guys?
I was wondering if you would even want to know.
Was nine.
I was seven.
I was in high school, and mm-hmm. I did not see it in theaters. I didn't see it until it came out the year later in home video.
Okay.
This was a film that was spun out of the animated series, obviously Batman the Animated Series. It was originally intended to be direct to home video.
That makes sense.
And in the middle of production, Warner Brothers decided, no, we're going to put it out in theaters, so they had to scramble to change it a little bit to make it more appropriate for the theaters, mostly the technical elements, mostly a widescreen.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. The beginning, the opening credits mm-hmm. Look like, oh, this feels theatrical. But then the rest of it kind of is like, yeah, this I could see this kind of being direct to video.
Yeah, it's one of my criticisms would be, and we'll get into it in a second, but we're on this right now, is that it doesn't look like it's got the budget of a theatrical release in terms of the animation. Right. It looks like it's a little better. We'll just say that the animation of the series was a B, just to pick a random number. This would be like a B+, whereas a theatrical release should have like an A- level of animation. It was a little better than the show, but it was like, you know, you could see why this might be a little disappointing to some people.
And I think because of the character designs and the great art direction,
yes,
we remember it as being like A+,
right,
with the movie and the TV series. But like when you get into the actual like animation of it, it doesn't necessarily feel like a feature.
Right. So that was interesting. So that you can see that once you know that, you can see it on the screen that, oh, this was done on a direct-to-video budget. But well-regarded. Didn't do super well in the box office, to no one's surprise, but well-regarded. One of the most interesting things about this movie is that, and we'll get into our initial reactions when we first saw it in a second, but it's usually universally praised amongst most fans. So you know, when we announced we were doing this, people were like, oh, it's the greatest Batman movie of all time. And I assume they're talking about theatrical releases. And people love it. So it's nice that they're finally putting it out on Blu-ray. It's been remastered. It looks great.
Ah, see, I saw Paul say something online.
I disagree. Yeah. I think it looks a little soft.
You don't think that's the animation? That's the result of the animation style?
When they said they were doing a remaster on it, and when people talked, I remember just comment sections on like Blu-ray.com and stuff, and like, oh, are they actually remastering it? Because like that's going to be a little tricky, and that's going to be some money. And
can we pause to talk about what remastering actually is? Because I didn't know, and I actually did some research to look it up. I assumed you both already knew because of your experiences in media, but this might be a term that people don't understand. I wasn't able to find exactly what they did for this movie, but in general, when you had things on film, you would have what's called the master, mm-hmm. which was the original print that all the copies were made from.
Right.
And so if you want to digitally remaster something, you would take the film frame by frame and scan it at the upgraded resolution that you then want to send it out anew as. In this right. case, the highest resolution they offered was 1080p, but in a lot of cases, they're scanning them at 2K, 4K, yes. sometimes up to 8K resolution, so you can future-proof it against better displays in years to come. And one of the things I was reading, which is pretty incredible, was that for a frame of film at 4K resolution, it can be up to 12 terabytes of data before they start editing it.
Yeah, it's big.
It's kind of incredible to me.
I mean, 4K is ridiculous. But I wonder, Paul, if that's because, you know, the source is of a, you know, you can only scan it, you can only make it so clean.
Yeah, so I was going into this with sort of guarded expectations, knowing that, okay, this is from 1993. This movie came out when I was 9. So, like, I knew that it wasn't going to be, like, Disney putting out, like, Pinocchio the Diamond Edition or whatever. Right. Like, they're not going to put that much money into it.
Right.
But I just want people to, you know, sort of temper their expectations. It is pretty soft in areas, especially when you're coming from like the movies that we've been reviewing,
yes.
As the Animated Brain Trust, where they're very crisp, very vibrant. And this has some parts where it kind of looks like you're looking at it through, you know, like a Coke bottle or something.
To be clear, my eyes are
yeah, getting, you're an
getting,
old
they're
man.
Getting old. So it could be that everything in the world looks a little soft, and therefore I thought it looked fine. But
it's like when I show my dad like a Blu-ray of like The Great Escape or something, he's like, this looks like my DVD. It was like, you know, it's so your results may vary, but just be forewarned that this is not, you know, an ultra 4K crazy right. remaster.
No, they didn't dump a ton of money. There's no special edition stuff, just the trailer.
But based on watching the original trailer in YouTube, one thing I picked up on from the Blu-ray release is that the sound is a lot better.
Sound is great. We should say that. And I forgot how good the score is on this. It's fantastic.
When we first started watching it, Julie's first comment was like, why are they doing Batman theme in Latin? That's weird.
Which are apparently Warner Brothers executives' names backwards.
Oh, that's even weirder.
To make it sound like that.
So you guys saw this in when you were wee little lads. What was your initial reaction to originally seeing this film?
I'll go first. Just my memory of it. This was more of an event to me than even Batman Returns, which came out the year before. Mm-hmm. I didn't see Batman 89 in the theater. I saw Batman Returns in the theater, also with my dad. I remember being really into the Penguin stuff. Not the Penguin, but like the Penguins. Because I love animals and I always did. So I was way into that. And but like this was coming out of the animated series, which is my Batman. that was, I mean, I had hand-me-down Batman comics from my older cousins, mm-hmm. but Batman the Animated Series for my generation, that's Batman. Right. So that was a touchstone for me. And for there to be this big live action thing, I thought it was so cool. And I thought it was like, I remember thinking it was really sophisticated because there was like mobsters. Like it wasn't just like a bunch of like Adam West Batman villains. It was, you know, it was the mafia and stuff and mm-hmm. the graveyard bit with the Phantasm was, you know, really spooky and really dark. And I was like, man, this is so cool. Like they couldn't do this on TV and like on Saturday morning. And so I was really into it. And, but it's funny because I thought I remembered a lot of this movie, but there are some touches that really impressed me watching it again, because I guess it's been, 20 plus years
since you saw it last.
Seen it? Yeah, probably. Okay. I mean, I think it played on Cartoon Network or something, and I might have caught bits of it in the years since, but I've never formally sat down and watched it since it came out on video, probably.
Ryan, what were your thoughts? Do you remember?
Yeah, no, I remember watching it and enjoying it, but I think I enjoyed it mostly in the way that I enjoyed the rest of the Bruce Timm Batman mm-hmm. the Animated Series. It didn't stand out especially to me, and you know, I vacillated as a kid a lot back and forth between Tim Burst stuff and Adam West stuff. And mm-hmm. so this, you know, this was when I was in the mood for serious grown up Batman times. This was what I would go to, but I still enjoyed Adam West. And this is Adam West is gone now. That's yep. sad. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about that, but, yeah. So I remember really enjoying this, and I'm continually surprised when I revisit this movie that Phantasm, the character, hasn't become more of a mainstay. I mean, she's popped up a few other times in the Timverse stuff, but they've really kind of kept a hands-off approach.
Yeah. I didn't see it until the next year on home video. I was sophomore or junior in high school. Batman the Animated Series is my all-time favorite cartoon, my all-time favorite depiction of Batman. I was kind of bored by the movie when I saw it originally. I wasn't that impressed by it. There's some things we'll get into that I don't really like about it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
From a lore standpoint and character stuff. But just as a film, once I read that it was meant to be a home video movie, and suddenly that made a lot more sense to me. It didn't feel like a big theatrical release story. It felt like just a longer episode or like a two-part episode. And I feel like there were much better two-part episodes. So I guess getting into it, my opinion didn't really change. I don't think I've seen it since, actually, since I originally saw it on home video in 1994. But I was kind of bored by it and not that impressed by it. Look, it's like an all-star team. It's Alan Burnett and Paul Dini and Martin Pasco, and Bruce Timm's one of the co-directors. And if I think back to the show, there's other two-part, I think the storylines with Two-Face or Robin's Reckoning, or there's all kinds of stories I think are better representations of this particular team's work with Batman than this particular story. I love a lot of things in it. I love seeing old Alfred. I love, you know, we get black-haired Alfred very, very few little in the anime stuff. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing old Alfred. But I didn't like that. First of all, the Phantasm is this bizarre, I don't want to say ripoff, but they're doing a version of the Reaper, which is the comic book character, who looks exactly like Phantasm. I don't know why
it's
just didn't.
Year two?
Yeah, Batman year two.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why they just didn't do the Reaper. I don't know why they had to change the. I don't know. That was weird to me because I was such a big fan of that story as a kid. I don't like sort of shoehorning in this character from his past that was so important to him. I mean, basically, she's the entire inspiration for him becoming Batman here, which I didn't like as from a Batman lore standpoint. The character that's never mentioned again, character never is never used in any other place. She's this super important person in his life.
Are you saying the Phantasm is a Mary Sue, Connor?
And then the Joker feels out of place in the story. It feels like they were like, oh shit, we need to put something else in here to liven it up. Like when he comes in, it's just sort of like, well, why is he here? And then the fact that they make him a mobster. I mean, I get that that's playing on the Batman 89 origins, which is what they did a lot in the cartoon. But he just feels out of place. And then he takes over the movie completely. It's a weird movie to me.
The one thing that surprised me a lot was in the opening sequence when the Phantasm shows up and it's the first killing in the car garage.
Mm-hmm.
The Phantasm isn't like the most skilled killer. Like she makes mistakes. Spoilers.
Spoilers. Oh, sorry. Spoiler warning.
You know, she almost gets killed in that first thing. And that seems weird to me as for the first time that we see this.
Yeah, she seemed really scary.
Seemingly supernatural. Right. Yeah, badass kind of like, should be like Jason or Michael Myers or something.
You should see them and think, oh man, Batman's in trouble, you know?
Yeah. And then like we get a moment where like she's running away through the garage and I was like, you shouldn't like tip your hands this early about the phantasm being, you know, flawed or not being, you know, this otherworldly threat, this really intimidating thing without human foibles.
Right.
So I really like, you know, the bit in the graveyard where that, like, that's how you should see the phantasm for the first time, really. Like, that's how that character is sort of meant to be seen. I also think it's kind of fun that it's Stacey Keach doing the scary voice, and that's who plays her father. But he's, you know, he's doing a different voice, but that's just kind of an interesting. I was like, I wonder who they got, you know, to be the male voice, the representation of the phantasm. And so I looked that up. I was like, oh, it's Stacey Keach too. That's cool. That's a good idea. I think there are some really just effective moments, even if the plot isn't perfect. I think there's stuff like Alfred seeing Batman put on the cowl for the first right. time and the orchestra swells, mm-hmm. which is a really strong moment. And I was like, oh man, made me sort of like, you know, sit up in my chair. And then, you know, I mentioned the graveyard scene. I like the idea of this world of tomorrow, this imperfect version of what we used to think the future would be. Mm-hmm. I think that plays into the themes of this movie really well. And then, of course, the bit with Bruce at his parents' grave saying, I didn't expect to be happy. Can I stop being Batman now? And that's, you know, I think everybody has a different take or a different perspective on how Batman should be portrayed. Mm-hmm. I think this one humanizes Bruce in an interesting way. And that was one of the strong points of the series, is there was a very distinct Batman and a very distinct Bruce Wayne. And I liked the way Kevin Conroy sort of modulated his voice to be Batman. Oh.
That's heaven for me, is hearing Kevin Conroy switch back and forth between Bruce and Batman. And then the scene at the grave was really interesting because, like, when Julie saw that scene, she was like, you know, you can just stop, Bruce. Like, you don't have to keep going. And I was like, Julie, we're not talking about a psychologically healthy person here. Like,
and then you know, Andrea Beaumont walks in and she says, maybe they sent me. Maybe I'm, you know, their way of telling you. It's like that story about, like, oh, there was a flood and the guy's, like, praying to God to send him help. And a boat comes along. He says, no. God's sending help for me. Don't worry about it. I'll see you later. And he ends up in heaven and God's like, I sent you a boat. I sent you all this stuff right. and you didn't do anything. He's like, well, I was, you know, so that's sort of Bruce hearing what he wants to hear, you know, like he psychologically, I think it's just really interesting. I think Bruce, you know, is using his parents as an excuse to be Batman. In some cases, like that might have been the first, you know, impetus. I have to avenge my parents' death, but then it sort of stops being that, and it becomes, this is how I.
Well, it's who he is. He doesn't know anything.
Me.
He doesn't know anything else.
I don't know anything else. Right? I just think it's really interesting that he has this out, where he can say, you know, I can donate money to the police, and they can, you know, step it up against the criminals. I don't have to do this. And he's actively looking for excuses to continue to be Batman and throw off this relationship. He has, you know, these intimacy issues, and this is in a, you know, 1993 Batman cartoon. And I thought that was like really compelling.
Ryan, your initial thoughts having watched it decades later?
I enjoyed it this time around. It was Julie's first time seeing it. And so it was fun to watch it with somebody who knows Batman and knows the Timverse pretty well, but hadn't seen this particular piece of it. And so I enjoyed watching it with her. And a lot of her takeaways were just a lot of initial questioning of like, wait, so when is this supposed to take place? Because it feels like it's the 40s or even the 20s or sometimes the 50s. And I was like, well, it's, you know, Batman's got a computer, so it doesn't really take place in any of those times.
That was the animated series' whole milieu.
Yeah, but then when you throw flashbacks into it, And well, that was another thing. Yeah. It's very, yeah.
The World of Tomorrow stuff, I love, I mean, I have a very fond affection for the Art Deco style. And so, like, the fonts and the styling and the art, all that, I was just eating it up. And then when it goes into the present, and the World of Tomorrow is trash, and it's like, how many years has this been? This is like, this feels like 50 years worth of decay and breakdown. And I know, Connor, you said you didn't like some of the retconning of the origin, but I do like the let's go to the World's Fair, see the world of the future, and that actually does represent elements of Batman's future, like his idea for the car. And
that's one of the things I liked about it.
I mean, I didn't hate the movie. I just was kind of bored by it, but there was definitely elements of it that were really good.
Rewatching it this time, it was really hard to extract hearing Dana Delaney, plays Andrea, as Lois Lane.
Right.
That was really tough for me. It was like, especially because later on, like when I was in junior high and high school, the animated series stuff was still going, but the style had changed significantly and Superman was a big part of it now. And they did a Batman-Superman crossover, and there is a romantic subplot between Lois and Bruce. And so it kept like kind of messing with my head a little bit to hear someone who also sounds like Lois having a romantic plot with Bruce. That was more distracting than anything else. But overall, I had fun watching it.
Just since you bring that up, I always loved that dynamic in the New Adventures, or in that, it was at that debut movie where they cross over.
Mm-hmm. Where Lex and the Joker team up, so Batman and Superman have to team up.
Yeah.
And so Lois likes Superman, finds Clark annoying. She hates Batman, is very attracted to Bruce Wayne. I just thought that was a great sort of distillation of how those characters are perceived by different people, you know, in that universe. And so that's sort of informed a lot of my understanding of Lois and like what she's into. I don't know. Like, she thinks Batman's like a dirtbag. And
I watched, you know, I did a whole thing for the website back when we had written content on the animated series, and I rewatched the entire Superman. Done, not to get on a Superman tangent, but that show was so weird because there was no love triangle. They barely ever dealt with the romance of Superman, Lois Lane, and Clark Kent in that show. So that made sense to me that she would be into Batman because she certainly wasn't into Superman, not in that show.
Mm.
To the point where the final scene of that show is them kissing on the roof, and you're just like completely flabbergasted that it's even happening because there's been no lead up to it whatsoever. Anyway, back to the film. So the main story is that their Phantasm is this, you know, masked Grim Reaper-esque character who's killing mobsters, and it turns out there's a tie-in to Bruce's past, and the Joker shows up because he was part of that old mob gang, and
the scene, I laughed out loud in the scene where Bruce finally draws the smiley face on the photo.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, a guy with the exact same facial features, but when he smiles, it's the Joker.
There's a lot of flashbacks, as we discussed, because Andrea Beaumont's a character that Bruce encounters in college. So we see young Bruce Wayne. We see him training. There's a little bit of Batman Year One in there when he's running around in a ski mask trying to fight crime. And there's elements of Year One. There's elements of Year Two from the comics. But ultimately, it's telling its own story with new characters. And, you know, the classic stuff here is great. This is my favorite era of the show. You know, I didn't like when they redesigned all the characters as much as I love the old designs. I love the voice acting is terrific.
I like them both.
I don't dislike them, but I like this one the most. This is to me,
I know what you mean.
I think of as the show. Everybody's kind of stocky and thick, and I just kind of like that look of it. But I don't know. It didn't feel special for some reason.
Yeah, I get that.
It doesn't feel anything more than like a three-part episode.
If I'm being honest, I think the Shirley Walker score, and she did some of the score with Tim Burton on like the original animated series stuff, but she was the main composer for that. I think the score she does here and like the sound design of this movie does a lot of heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
Like the bit I talked about with Alfred seeing Bruce put the cowl on for the first time. That's score right there. The visuals feel more impressive in my mind, like thinking back on the movie, because I think of the music and because of the fact that it was a feature, the fact that they probably put a little bit more into like the surround of it. So if you're, you know, listening to it on a decent, you know, sound system, it does feel like a bit more of a theatrical experience than if you were just looking at it you know, like muted. Right. It does look like the TV show. It does look like, and but now you talk about it being a, you know, originally a direct-to-video thing. I think the Phantasm would have been an interesting character, like if they'd done an arc on the TV show, right. Like if one of the seasons followed the Phantasm, and then, you know, you got to know Andrea more, and it wasn't just, oh, this woman who is so pivotal to Bruce's right. life just suddenly shows up.
And then it's like never seen again.
And then never
mentioned
right,
again.
Never seen again. Never, yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I realize she comes back later. She shows up at the end of the Justice League Unlimited. But, like,
but also in a flashback. She only shows up as a flashback.
Odd to me that somebody so important to Bruce's development as a vigilante is never mentioned again or mentioned before. Mm. As a Batman fan, it's just like there's so many other people you could have gone with here to tell a very similar story and not have it feel so out of place. So I'm curious because I'm more mystified than anything about the people's reverence for the film. So you guys loved it. And when people describe it as the best Batman film of all time, is that something you guys agree with? Do you understand what they're saying?
I do understand what they're saying.
I would understand if it came out during the Schumacher era. I mean, and it's certainly better than the Schumacher films, but it didn't come out. It predated the Schumacher era. So
right.
Tell me what they mean when they say that.
I think Suicide Squad is clearly... I mean, it's the only one
your
that,
trap.
I mean, it's an Oscar-winning film, Connor.
Shots fired.
It is an Oscar-winning film.
I still haven't seen it. Oh, don't care. I get what they're saying. For me, it's nice that Kevin Conroy, as Batman, has at least one theatrical release under his belt. I think he's more than earned it with his tenure in the role.
Sure.
And so I think maybe people are, especially, and Mark Hamill as well. So I think maybe people are taking their emotional connection to those two actors playing those two characters and pinning a lot of that on this movie. And I'm not sure this movie has the shoulders to really hold that up. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where it's coming from. And so I get it from that perspective. But I don't, after rewatching it, I don't agree that it's the best theatrical Batman.
I think it's, for me, it's the best characterization of Batman.
Sure. Yes.
In a feature film. Like, those other movies are, like, guys playing Batman. This is a movie that actually has Batman in it. You know? it's weird. But that's how I feel about the animated Batman. Like, that's the real one. Like, all the other ones are, like, adaptations of him.
I just wish he was in a more compelling story. I agree with you completely on the characterizations.
I think it's a cool premise. I think it would be cool, like, if they, like, remade this in, like, a live-action version. Like, mm-hmm. and, like, did some nips and tucks. But, like, I didn't expect to be happy thing, like that's a really cool moment. That's something that you know, they should mine that a little bit. Like, you guys, I think Ryan said it's weird that Phantasm hasn't shown up more.
Yeah.
I think there is real potential there. Or if you wanted to, I don't know how many times the Reaper has shown up over the years, but like if you wanted to, you know, sort of fuse those two together and just, I don't know, I think it's an interesting concept. I think there are a lot of interesting themes and set pieces. I love the bit where Batman, like, there's some cool moments involving motorcycles. There's the one where it's Bruce just like knocking a dude off a motorcycle in the beginning, mm-hmm. and it goes into like weird Matrix slow motion, but like before Matrix and better. And the other bit was where he's on the bat cycle and like pivots so the bat cycle goes into the turbine and explodes it, and so I was like, oh cool, because there was a point in the movie where I can see where you were bored, where I was like, there's not a lot of action set pieces or there hasn't been one in several minutes, and that's weird because this is animated, and if it's animated you can kind of do anything,
and it's
you
short have, it's not like it's
yeah it's 76 minutes long, but
Julie and I were laughing at how fantastically slow the bat plane is. It's just like it took him more than a, you know, minute to catch up with the person running on foot. I mean, maybe he's got to fly really slow because he's in a city with a lot of skyscrapers, but it was just kind of, I know it's partly how the animation works and all that stuff, but we were chuckling.
Should I very quickly sum up Jeff Reed's, our buddy Jeff Reed's pedantry on this movie? I mentioned on Facebook that I was going to be watching this movie for the first time in a while, and Jeff Reed said, I really like that movie, but there's one thing that's always bothered me about it, is that the Phantasm shows up in the opening scene, does the murder, and then that Arthur Reeves guy calls Andrea Beaumont on a plane as she's arriving in Gotham after the murder takes place. And it's like, why would she be on a plane if she was already in Gotham as the Phantasm? And if you actually break down those first scenes, it's not necessarily the next night. It could be several nights later.
Right, it could be any time later, yeah.
And in my head canon, okay, it feels very noir. It feels very like almost Double Indemnity, where like she would do this convoluted thing of driving into Gotham incognito, doing the Phantasm murder, driving out of Gotham, and then making a big scene as a socialite at the airport, getting her picture taken, getting on the plane, and arriving in Gotham after the Phantasm murder has taken place, so that, you know, no one's going to expect it's this woman who is this hard, you know, this mafia killer, this hardened killer, but I should still come up with some kind of ruse, some kind of alibi.
So Robert Durst is what you're saying. This is, she pulled a jinx.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly it, right?
That's exactly it. Like,
buy a plane ticket for one place, drive to a different place, commit a crime, mm-hmm. and then fly from the place that you bought the ticket.
And then make sure you're noticed at the airport arrive. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's got problems. This movie's got problems.
Well,
we're going to be mad at you.
Whatever.
So you guys did a book explode, Connor, on, is it A Dark Knight? The Paul Dini, Eduardo Rizzo graphic novel?
Sure. The title of it is A Dark Knight. The Dark Knight? A Dark Knight? Something like that.
I think it was A Dark Knight.
I think it was just called Dark Knight.
Yeah. But
it's just called Dark Knight, a true Batman story. That's what it is.
There you go. So you guys got to talk about that on the book explode. I wrote a thing about it on panels, but that book takes place in the real world while this movie is being made. And that's also, I loved that. I thought that was a great graphic novel.
It was, and it got robbed at the Eisners.
Yeah. So if people are looking for a little bit more stylized look at behind the scenes of what was going on at Warner Brothers in those days.
I mean, look, I give them tons of credit. They made this movie in 8 months from the time they started to the time. I mean, like, that's crazy. But as a film, it doesn't, I mean, to me, there's still a difference between film and television. And this just felt like a long TV episode. I have the same thing about the Simpsons movie.
The way you said that sounds like you're building up, you know, to me, there's still a difference.
There is.
In this world of premiere TV.
Yeah, and in the world of peak TV. But
old man Connor's got lessons.
And then as Batman fan, I just never understood dropping these super important characters and then never mentioning them again. And it just feels like there's so much in the Batman canon you could have used for this. It would have made more sense.
So would you call this an opportunity or?
I just call it mystifying. I just think it's what it is. It's a directed home video movie that got released in theaters and it's pretty good, but it's not great. And I'm sort of mystified by the reverence that people hold for it. I mean, it's worth watching. It looks great. The voice acting's terrific. The music's terrific. There's great scenes. There's great pieces, but as a whole, I don't think it holds together very well as a film.
Okay. I think there are nostalgia glasses for this movie. And that's, I think, a very understandable iteration of nostalgia glasses. I don't think it's totally unwarranted nostalgia glasses, because I think, like, when you think of this as the prime time spotlight for Batman the Animated Series, which I think, as like a whole, I would put over any of the movies.
Well, also, if the Animated Series did air. I mean, and I realize you just used the word primetime in a different fashion.
Yeah,
it did air on primetime television. It wasn't like it was this hidden little gem. It was a very big deal.
The silver screen, like spotlight of it. Like it's the most, I don't know, it's the thing you can point to as, you know, the feature. And so it, whether or not it's the best example of it, it's not. It's not the best example of what came out of that production.
Yeah, I could pick three episodes and have I feel like much more of an you know,
but for better or worse, this is the ambassador of that production to the silver screen. This is the one that you got to eat popcorn with.
True,
that's a good point
for many people. So,
all right, Connor, what are your three? Feet of Clay, Heart of Ice.
I mean,
and the third one.
I have to go through the list because I feel like there's multi part episodes like you could have shown as a release and it would have been more impactful. But I got the figures on my desk. Along with all the other ones.
What's the robot one? What's the robot Batman? That's like iconic, I think. The cyborg Batman. Because they're making Funko Pops of that now.
They could have done a straight up Batman Year One or Batman Year Two. And obviously not like they're doing now, the straight adaptations. But doing it in the world of that Batman world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, just sort of like, if you want to do Batman's origins and how he came to be and all that stuff, just do it then.
something that hasn't come up. I'm imagining that with the Return of the Joker, you probably place over this.
Yeah, for sure.
Which isn't technically, you know, it's New Adventures style.
Right, but still.
Batman Beyond style, but.
Yeah.
It's real good.
I would put this, okay, if we talk about theatrical releases, I'd put it underneath The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Batman 89, Batman the Movie, Batman Returns, but I'd put it over all the Schumacher films, Batman, then The Dark Knight Rises. So I'd put it in the middle.
The only switch I would make is I'd put it over Returns.
That's the one that's kind of iffy.
Yeah, I like this better than Batman Returns.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I would put it, it's in the middle with Batman Returns. That's where I would put it.
Okay.
There's a lot of Christopher Walken in Batman Returns.
I don't see how that's a problem.
It's not a problem. It's just, that's the thing that I'm always surprised to remember of, like, oh, he's in a lot of this movie.
Bruce Wayne. No, it's over this one. That's for sure. That's just from that scene.
For you.
It's just, I don't know. It's disappointing for me personally. I'm happy people love it. I'm not saying people shouldn't love it, but I was hoping that older eyes, less teenage jadedness would enjoy it more than I did it originally when I was however old, 13 or 14. But I just didn't, and I was really sad.
I like that you still didn't enjoy it, but you thought it looked really crisp and nice. it's really soft.
Everything's backwards, apparently.
Backwards world.
Connor, how you doing with the state of Batman comics? Every once in a while, when we do these Batman animated brain trust shows, sometimes this is your chance to, like, give us your thesis on the current state of the comics.
DC is such in flux right now. It's hard to make any kind of declarative statements until they actually do what they're going to do.
Mm.
But I'm enjoying Tom King's Batman book. I'm enjoying Detective Comics mostly, although there's a lot of John Paul in it, and now they're reintroducing the old Batman armor as some sort of meta thing, and I hated that so much. You know, I hate Damian. Nightwing's a terrific book.
Your Damian hate is just, it's been percolating, and it's, like, concentrating, and I feel like it's just getting more and more venomous and more powerful, and I can't wait to see where this goes for you.
Look, Batman's okay right now, but I think, I was trying to explain this to Scott Snyder at Comic-Con. It's like, everybody's been conditioned to think that everything's going to change again after this Watchmen thing happens. I don't think anyone feels like they're on strong footing with DC books. And he was like, I don't understand that. Also, Batman's also good.
I really liked The Button.
The Button was terrific.
That was good. Yeah, I like that.
And I agreed with you when you said that Batman and Flash need to hang out more often. Just one-on-one.
For sure. 100%.
I think I especially like that because I've been really into the Flash TV show lately.
Yeah.
And Flash concepts.
Flash is great. But anyway, I don't feel like I got all that Ajita out during whatever show we did with that Damian. I don't need to go into another Damian rant. It's I don't read his book. I don't read Super Sons or whatever it is. So I don't read Teen Titans. If I can avoid them, I do.
Oh, tidbits. Because I don't want these to just be on my Facebook and then they don't go anywhere else. Guy who plays Arthur Reeves, city councilman, directed High School High. And that's a weird thing. High School High with John Lovitz and the race car tracks on his head.
Whoa.
Mark Hamill.
He's Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, he's Luke Skywalker. It was interesting to hear Mark Hamill 25 years ago Joker again.
Right. Same with Kevin Conroy. We have, you know.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't think Kevin Conroy could do young Bruce Wayne like this anymore.
Guys, Abe Vigoda was in this movie.
Abe Vigoda was terrific. And as soon as I heard him, I was like, oh, yeah. Right. Awesome. Plus, you know, not just Abe Vigoda, but it's a little bit of the Godfather connection.
Yes.
The voice cast is stellar. Bob Hastings is still a terrific Commissioner Gordon. I don't know if I've ever heard a better Commissioner Gordon.
Julie got really excited when she heard him as Commissioner Gordon again. She was like, yes, he's back!
Yeah.
Robert Costanza was a great Bullock. I mean, it's still, you know, there's a lot to enjoy here. I just didn't think it held together.
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. May he rest in peace as Alfred Pennyworth.
I just love seeing dark-haired Alfred. It makes me so happy whenever that happens.
I just wish I hadn't seen Paul's Facebook status about the remaster before watching this, because then it made me watch it completely differently, because I was, I think, more critical than I would have been. Especially there's the scene where Brodsky, I think is the mobster's name, it gets killed or attacked by the Phantasm in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where he's like cresting a hill, and the line of the hill is not stable. Like, it is jumping around the screen.
And I don't know if that's...
I don't know if that's from the original animation, the original cells. I feel like you could fix that digitally, but it wasn't. And I know there's like a philosophical reason why sometimes you don't fix mistakes, George Lucas, but that one's once I was watching it with Paul Montgomery's critical lips in my ear.
So you're saying it's Paul Montgomery ruined it for you?
Yep. Yep,
well, that's because a review of it ruined it for me. I read a review that just, I was like, I wonder how the transfer is.
Yeah,
I was
just passing it along. Yeah, vector for this virus.
Kill the messenger. But I'll say a nice thing about the transfer. There's film grain on this, and that was nice.
There is film grain on this, because we don't get film grain anymore. Digitally. Yeah. And they made a decision not to clean it up, and I think that they were smart to do so. Sometimes it made the backgrounds, the hand-painted backgrounds, stand out from some of the animation cells a little bit much. I think they probably upped the contrast a little bit, but other than that, yeah, it was nice.
You don't want to pull a Predator remaster and pull out all the grain and then make everything look like it's been airbrushed. That's bad.
So, Paul, did you say where this fit on your Batman movie?
I didn't, and I'm not going to. I don't want to make that list. I don't know. I'm in a weird place right now in hindsight on a lot of Batman movies and Batman movies going forward. So I don't know. I don't want to make a list. I think people should make a list on the website. I think people in the comments should.
So are we even going to, we didn't even put in the 1940s serials into this.
I haven't seen those.
Those are so good. They're so messed up.
I have them on DVD, but
yeah, you should watch them. They're really
Batman and Robin sneak out of a grandfather clock to scare Alfred. They like prank him with the droopy bat ears.
What's crazy about them is they only came out like 1 or 2 years after Batman and Robin debuted in the world. Mm. I mean, these are like pure.
There's two of them, right? It's a different cast, I want to say.
They're fun. But you make your list on iFanboy.com. Paul won't make his. His is classified.
It's classified.
I feel like my list might change with the next upcoming film on our Animated Brain Trust schedule.
What are you talking about? That's not a theatrical release.
Well, okay, I guess it's not a theatrical release, but it's. I'm real excited for it.
No, I mean, if you want to talk animated, I would say it doesn't even compare to something like Under the Red Hood.
Under the Red Hood.
Yeah. Sub-Zero.
I love that one.
I think it's weird. Sub-Zero came out in 98.
Yes.
There was also a feature length, not theatrical release. It was like Mystery of Batwoman. Remember that one?
With, what's her face? Regis and Kelly. She
2003.
Kelly Ripa.
Came out.
Kelly Ripa is the voice of Batwoman, I think?
And that was the standalone sequel to Mask of the Phantasm and Sub-Zero.
Huh.
I feel like it's fun to do these retro ones
I've never seen that one.
Get to on the Animated Brain Trust. But as long as our schedule stays full of new releases, I guess there's no time.
Well, if they do a remastered Blu-ray release, maybe we'll do it.
So we got the Harley Batman and Harley Quinn one next.
Yes, that comes in a couple of weeks. Well, end of the month.
We're gonna get a two-parter: Superman, Death of Superman, and then Reign of the Supermen.
I'm really interested in that because they've been doing this so long now; they finally remade one.
Looping back around, we started with Superman Doomsday, which is technically Death of Superman and Reign of the Supermen in a very abridged, truncated version. And so now they're going to do it as two separate movies. And our email conversation is basically, what kind of Superboy are we going to get? Are we going to get really 90s Superboy, or are we going to get...
I
want 90s Superboy. I want
tactile telekinesis.
I want round sunglasses.
Oh, yeah.
And floppy round sunglasses. Hair.
I mean, his hairstyle has actually kind of come back. Like, his hairstyle is basically John Hamm has in Baby Driver.
Yes.
Yes, it's the side cut.
We got a lot coming out. We got a lot to work with. And then these random things pop up. So we reconvene the Brain Trust for that. If you want to talk about Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, and if you want to rank your theatrical, remember, they have to be theatrical release. They have to have been in movie theaters.
I guarantee you people are going to put multiple lists. Like, this is my theatrical list. This is my including direct-to-video animation. This is my live-action only list.
That's totally fine. But they have to understand that we made our lists on the show for only movies that are in actual theaters where you can eat popcorn, get a soda, all that stuff.
We meaning you and me, and our list is almost exactly the same.
You can do that at iFanboy.com. It'll be posted for this show. You can listen to our weekly show, iFanboy. What is it even called? Pick of the Week podcast, where we talk about the week's comics. The Animated Brain Trust. We'll be back in
like 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks for Batman and Harley. Did Batman and Harley? Batman and Harley Quinn.
Wait, did you guys include Lego Batman?
Oh. it's going to be in that mix with Batman Returns and this.
I agree. I listened to your guys' podcast review of that and agreed that it's a joke that lasts a little bit too long.
Mm.
It worked great in the Lego movie. It was just a little... it was fine, but it was like...
Does the Lego movie count?
No. No.
Does Batman versus Superman count?
Yeah, I mean, that's
the first name in the title.
Close to the bottom.
Jesus, Paul. All right. For someone who's not even making the list.
Making our lives harder.
All right, so... Okay. The Dark Knight... Batman Return. I'm sorry, Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Batman 89, Batman the Movie, Batman Returns.
But you forgot Rises.
No, I haven't gotten that. That's at the bottom.
Oh.
Ow.
Guys, don't look up my Dark Knight Rises review on ifanboy.com. It doesn't hold up.
Ooh, now I have to.
I don't stand by that one.
Lego Batman Movie, this movie, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin.
Don't look up my Prometheus review either. Look up my Man of Steel one, but just for the comments. There's like 900 comments.
Batman versus Superman, Batman's Dark Knight Rises. I think that's all of them. I think that's it.
I'll do mine in the comments. It's just okay. So you don't have to hear another list.
Wait, is Dark Knight Rises the very last one on your list?
Yes.
So the Schumacher ones go above that?
Yes.
Okay.
Paul, some days you just can't get rid of a bum.
That's a whoa, that's not a Schumacher one.
No, but it's Dark Knight Rises.
No.
It's the best I know. It's from Batman the movie. But it's a major plot point of the Dark Knight Rises, and Julie pointed it out to me, and I think it's the funniest low key joke I have heard about that movie that nobody else ever seems to make the connection for.
Alright, so anyway, ifanboy.com is where you can find all that stuff. Make your list. We'll talk to you next time. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan.
But my first name is Robin.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.